It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Patriots certainly picked up where they left off. A little bit more offense in week number one than they had in the Super Bowl against the Los Angeles Rams. However, I've already heard the question, is this team going 19-0? As if it's so easy to do. Not even the Patriots have ever done it. Not even Bill Belichick. Not even Tom Brady. So we'll find out. We'll have to find out together. But I do think it's hysterical, the overreactions after week number one. I don't know whether or not it's safe to come out again. I may still have to be wearing the full body armor for all of the overreactions from week one. But at least it's now in the books. Dust settling. And now we turn our sights to week number two. And things change. It's a fluid situation. Not only will we see new players joining rosters, like Antonio Brown with the New England Patriots, but also we've got guys who are injured, guys who will be out for a week, a few weeks, a month. In the case of, say, a Nick Foles on injured reserve, will be out until week 11 at the earliest. And so there are certainly injuries that affect the picture too, which is why I very rarely will give you my predictions or my thoughts on what might happen in the future. Because in pro sports, man, when you make predictions, generally the sports gods laugh in your face. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Good to hear from those of you who are Raiders fans or Saints fans. I did hear from a lot of Texans fans too who are disappointed at the way things played out in New Orleans, though. As much as the ending was painful with that prevent defense, I certainly think we got to see the abilities of the Texans on display. No, they did not protect the lead, but it was certainly fun when they took the lead in 13 seconds. And still my biggest concern remains about Deshaun Watson, that he is going to get hit so much. I mean, he is on pace to get sacked 100 times, it feels like. Half dozen more sacks by the Saints against the Texans tonight. And I worry for his safety. Now, he's an incredible athlete. He's young. He seems to bounce back. But man, with a lot of those hits, he has to spend extra time in the tent or has to take a bus to his next away game. You just need to protect that investment. And the O-line was up to its old tricks for sure. As for the New Orleans Saints, they're ticked off about another call that went against them at the end of the first half, and they felt like they got gypped out of 15 seconds. Okay. So you got the win. Take the money and run, baby. So I'd love to get your thoughts on Monday Night Football on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And before Monday Night Football, I always listen to the interviews that Jim Gray does on Westwood One with Larry Fitzgerald and Tom Brady. Larry is one of my favorite players in the NFL, one of my favorite athletes in any sport. He's very thoughtful and insightful, and he's also very calm and obviously very talented at what he does. And in the Cardinals' first game of the season, he had 8 catches, 113 yards, the late touchdown that allowed them to tie the game and send it into overtime. And I also empathize with him for the fact that he's continually breaking in, quote unquote, new quarterbacks, or if not young QBs like Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen, it's been a revolving door since Carson Palmer and even before Carson Palmer. And yet he has chosen to stay put in the desert. He is an icon, not just in the Phoenix area, but all over the state of Arizona. He's a great ambassador for the NFL. He's a former Walter Payton Man of the Year. He represents all that's good about professional sports. And he continues to play, takes care of himself. He's productive. And he will go down as one of the greatest players in that franchise's history, not to mention a Hall of Famer. And so I always enjoy hearing what he has to say. Now, he steers clear of controversy as much as possible, which I understand. But he does give Jim Gray his predictions, which I think is fun. You're not going to get that from a lot of players, but he will do that with Jim Gray. And so he was asked, now this is before the Raider game, just so you know the context. He was asked about his reaction to everything that's happened with the Raiders and Antonio Brown and now him moving on to New England.
I've sat back and watched it like everybody else has watched it, and I've never seen anything quite like it. But, you know, I'm not one to pile on. You know, I let people say what they want to say. He's got a fresh start, you know, on the best player-coach tandem in the history of our game. And I think everybody's interested to see, you know, how dynamic, you know, that team can be offensively with the addition of such a great player.
The Raiders play this evening. Do you think they can get on the same page with everything that has gone on and the distraction that he has been?
I think they definitely can. I mean, I think, you know, none of the players would say it, but I think, you know, they're happy that it's over, that the saga and the drama and the controversy and having to answer questions about is over, and they can get back to playing football and focusing. This is their last year playing in Oakland. They only have 8 more times to play in that great city that have won so many championships. And so I think they can focus on going out there and just playing ball, and they know kind of what's set now.
So that's Larry Fitzgerald of the Arizona Cardinals before the Raiders kicked off. So you hear the question from Jim Gray about them being able to focus on football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. We will definitely let you hear from Larry about his young quarterback. A lot of praise for him in Kyler Murray's debut. What Larry saw in this number one overall draft pick who helped to bring his team back on Sunday. But while we're talking about Antonio Brown, Tom Brady was also asked about it as well when he spoke to Jim Gray. Now, you may remember that Jim and Tom are like buds. They're BFFs. And so you get, this is why I listen. You get a candid Tom Brady with these long answers like you very rarely get in any other forum. And so he will say things to Jim Gray that I never hear him say anywhere else. Which is why not only do I listen, but I'm generally busy tweeting. So you should see me. I was in my office, but I wasn't at my desk. My stationary bike is also in my office. And so I was on my bike with my phone, listening, taking notes, and tweeting about what Tom Brady said to Jim Gray. Because I'm telling you what, it's the kind of stuff that you just don't get anywhere else. For instance, Tom Brady confirmed that he did, in fact, offer to let Antonio Brown stay at his home if it would make Brown's transition easier. Now, I know this turned into a big joke over the weekend. Are you kidding? Tom Brady asked Antonio Brown to move in with him. I mean, you guys, I'm sure he's not or wouldn't be in the bedroom next to their kids, for heaven's sakes. I mean, think about it. He's probably got many guest rooms and potentially even a guest house for when other family comes to visit. Anyway, Brady told Jim Gray it was an offer he's made to many other players in the past who are new to the New England Patriots to try to ease their transition. Okay, so he did confirm that, in fact, he extended out that offer to Antonio Brown. And he also said that he met Brown for the first time on Monday when Brown was in the Patriots facility.
You know, we're going to meet as much as we possibly can. I think that quarterback-receiver relationship is so important. The more you know each other, the more you know what each other are thinking, the faster you can accelerate the trust and confidence in one another when you get on the field. And I have that with a lot of guys that I've played with, certainly guys that are on the roster now, Julian, Philip Dorsett, Josh, you saw that last night. But when you haven't played with guys, you've got to try to do it as quickly as possible. And the clock is ticking on us right now. This is not the off-season program. This is about real games that count, and we're going to try to spend as much time as we can together and really get up to speed and lock in with what our roles and responsibilities are.
So Brady mentions, as you hear him talk about the receiver quarterback relationship, and that they are already behind the eight ball, that they're already down in the timetable because they didn't have OTAs, the preseason training camp, all of that jazz, the way that he would like to. But it was the same situation with Josh Gordon. So last year, was it week three, if I'm not mistaken? I feel like it was the first month when the Patriots traded with the Browns for Josh Gordon, and they started spending as much time together as possible on the practice field to develop that rhythm and rapport, but also away from the facility so that they could get to know each other. It's maybe not necessary or something that every quarterback would do, but we saw Derek Carr do it with Antonio Brown. We saw AB show up at his house. So maybe he did take Tom Brady up on his offer. But we saw that happen in Oakland as well. And Peyton Manning was notorious for forcing his receivers to spend inordinate amounts of time with him, practicing and throwing and catching and just trying to develop that relationship that Brady refers to. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Jim Gray also asked Tom about Antonio's reputation, and Tom said as far as he was concerned, none of that mattered. None of that carried forward. That was all in the past, and he wasn't going to judge. I don't think he said that was all in the past. But his point was, I'm not going to judge based on what I've heard about a player's past. I'm only going to form judgments based on what he does with us, which I think is pretty, it's necessary, but it's also wise, because if you were constantly judging teammates based on what they did or who they were, how they acted before they got to you, you might not be able to do your job. And I'm not saying that he should forget all about it or have eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, only that it's not possible for them to do their job if they waste that kind of time worrying about what happened before that athlete came to their organization. And let's be honest, not every player approves of the actions of other athletes or likes another athlete who joins their roster. A great example of that is Jason Witten with Greg Hardy. He made it very clear, because of what his mom has gone through as a victim of domestic violence, that he wasn't a fan of having Hardy on board, but that because he was a teammate with the Dallas Cowboys, he was going to be a professional and work with him. No doubt there were Patriots that watched the way that Antonio Brown acted and thought he was a clown, but their job requires them to work together now. And so in order to do their job professionally, this is what has to happen. And Jim Gray asked him about kind of conforming and lining up to the standards of Bill Belichick.
I've had a lot of experience in 20 years of football with a lot of different teammates. You know, if you look at a guy like Randy, you know, whatever is said about him, you know, he's a great friend of mine 12 years later after we met. You know, we have a great relationship. He came in and set the league on fire that season. And he was so excited to play and compete, was an incredible teammate, and what we did that season, you know, was the best statistic season, you know, our team has ever had in terms of offense.
Referring, of course, to Randy Moss, who has very often been brought to mind, remembered, when the conversation turns to the Patriots bringing on board Antonio Brown and kind of giving him an opportunity to rehab his image, his reputation, his NFL career. Randy Moss spent 07, 08, 09 with the New England Patriots, and obviously they had a really incredible campaign the first year he was there. That was 07, where Moss himself caught 23 touchdown passes from Tom Brady. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Good to hear from you if you're tuning into the show for the first time or for the umpteenth time. I like it. Everything in between. Always good to talk to you. Vote for our Monday MVP, and soon we will have Touchdown Tuesday poll up as well. And straight ahead, more to talk about with the NFL. But I also want to get to some of the other storylines from the last few days in sports that we haven't covered, like Major League Baseball, that home run chase that's going on. And though the Texans did not win on the football field in New Orleans, boy, their baseball team picked him up, to be sure. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Here's the 2-0.
And he blasts this one. Deep left field. Chirinos, did you? You did. Listen for it. A three-run homer, Robinson Chirinos. Astros with seven jacks on the night.
And that ties a club record. It's seven home runs.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
If the Texans didn't make you happy, Houston sports fans, I guess that was a quick and abrupt response by the Saints after the Texans scored in 13 seconds to take the lead in that final minute. They left a little bit too much time on the clock for their defense and for Drew Brees and the Saints in their own house at the Superdome. However, it was a total rout for the Houston Astros, who continue their assault atop what is now a big lead in the AL West. But this was a game against Oakland, and as you hear, a 15-0 win. So the Astros now have a 10.5-game lead atop that division. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. And as I mentioned again, Robert Ford on the Astros Radio Network. Even as I was watching that first game of Monday Night Football, I was seeing all of the various tweets pop up about Yordan Alvarez, who had two more home runs. So he's now at 24, but also a couple more RBI. So now over 70 RBI for the season as well. And their pitching staff has been so good. Zach Greinke is now 5-1 with them. It seems like their lineup puts the fear of God into any other pitcher. I mean, Mike Fiers gave up 9 earned runs on 9 hits and allowed 5 homers to this Astros lineup. And while they certainly have nights where they don't seem to get the timely hits, they also look like a complete package that is ready for October. And so for the Astros, they were picking up the Texans on Monday night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio, keeping our eyes on that race for best record in Major League Baseball. And right now, this is nutso, the Astros and the Yankees, who also won on Monday night and what was the end of their series with the Red Sox, odd. But they both have the same 95-50 record. 95-50. And with 145 games already in the books, they've got 17 left to go in the regular season. So 100 wins is well within their reach. Top of the AL Central, you have the Twins at 88 wins. But then talking about the Braves in the National League, while they are at 90, so they're exactly 5 games back of the pace being set by the Astros and Yankees, they're still not out of it with the time they've got left. Another home run for Ronald Acuna. Another home run for Josh Donaldson. They're both approaching 40 dingers on the season. And then Freddie Freeman continues to rack up the RBI. So the Braves are playing incredible baseball right now. They've actually stretched that lead in the NL East over the Nationals to nearly 10 games now. And so the Braves putting themselves in playoff form. And then the Dodgers, whose magic number is 1. They were off on Monday night, but they're at 93-52. So they've lost some ground with these last couple series in that race for best record overall, but they still do lead the race for best record in the National League. And while we're talking about home runs, the rookie continues to show the way.
The 0-1 hit high in the air to left center. Pretty deep. It's on its way, and it is gone. A home run by Pete Alonso. He hits number 46 into the M&M suite seats beyond the 370 mark. 46 home runs for the rookie, Pete Alonso. The Mets are leading by a score of 1-0.
he also tacked on number 47. And so Pete Alonso, who at that point had 46 with Howie Rose on the Mets Radio Network, finishes up the night with 47. So a pair of home runs for him. And he now is two clear of Mike Trout in the race for most homers, so home run champion of 2019, for whatever that gets you. But he could be the home run champion from the All-Star weekend, so home run derby champ. And then in addition to that, could also be the guy who paces the field as a rookie, which is really amazing. Trout with 45, Christian Yelich, Cody Bellinger, Eugenio Suarez of the Reds, all with 44. Jorge Soler of the Royals continues to extend the franchise mark for a single season. He's at 41 now. And as I mentioned, Freeman, along with Josh Donaldson and Acuna, they are knocking on the door of 40. So could be a very crowded 40 home run club as we get to the end of the regular season. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. One storyline that I did not have a chance to talk about on last night's show was the fact that the Red Sox, not even a year after they win the World Series title in really dominant fashion, an incredible regular season and postseason for the Red Sox, they fired their general manager, Dave Dombrowski, and there was not a press conference held. So the ownership of the Red Sox ended up putting out just a statement, which I thought was kind of weak, but they left it to manager Alex Cora to talk about Dombrowski's departure.
Unfair, fair, I don't know. The team already sent a statement, and they wanted to make sure, you know, that we appreciate what they did as an organization. And I know for some people it's probably not enough. For others, maybe it is. I'm just here like every day, you know, just to talk to you people for whatever you guys want to talk about, you know. From my end, like I said yesterday, I was very surprised, but at the same time, you think about it today, and you know, this is the guy that gave me a shot to become a big league manager. You know, for 4 or 5 years, you go through this process, and nobody gave you a shot, and all of a sudden, you know, Dave Dombrowski, 40 years in the big leagues, you know, decides to give me a chance to run this organization as a manager. And we were successful last year. This year, not that much, you know, and there's a business that, you know, sometimes you got to take tough decisions, and it was a tough decision. And then, you know, our ownership decided that, you know, they're, from now on, they're going to look for somebody else, you know, to run baseball operations. And they explain it very simple, you know. The guy is amazing. He's probably a Hall of Famer. What he did for the organization the last, 4 or 5 years, it was great. And I think everybody's appreciative of what they've had done.
Alex Cora emotional about Dave Dombrowski. Doesn't sound like he was involved or consulted or even knew about it ahead of time. But the Red Sox manager thanking Dave for giving him the opportunity to manage, which no doubt for any of us who've ever been in that situation where a boss took a chance, a boss gave you an opportunity that you'd waited for, that you'd been passed over for previously, that particular boss will always mean something important, something special, always have a unique spot in your memory and in your career. And so I appreciate Alex Cora mentioning that. There were certainly some pointed comments from former MLB front office exec Jim Duquette on SiriusXM MLB Radio, and we'll let you hear from him a little bit later on about why the Red Sox made this change. What we do know about professional sports and college sports too, but in professional sports, because it's such a business, that winning tends to give you a little more rope, a little more leash. Winning tends to cause your bosses to overlook whatever friction you create or whatever personality conflicts there may be. Losing exacerbates those personal issues. And often, if you have not played nice, have not cooperated or worked with the people above you on the totem pole, those that are higher up the food chain, well, then it comes down on your head. And I can think of a lot of examples of that. Almost as though that personality conflict And I don't think you can ever point to one person or the other when it comes to stuff like that. But in high energy, high pressure environments like professional sports, if you're not winning and you're creating trouble or stirring up personal issues, well, then you no longer have that same buffer. And one example that comes to mind is Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco with Trent Baalke. And they were both alpha males, very strong personalities. And the Niners front office got tired of butting heads with him. Now, as long as he was getting them to NFC championships, they were good. But once they had a season that was 500, then no longer worth putting up with that constant friction and that constant butting heads. Well, that's just one example. There are many of those in professional sports. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and then our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's brought to you toll-free by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Switch. Do you like that, my voice? Switch to Geico. This cold refuses to go away. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. I can't tell if I still think I sound weird in my own ears, but my colleague out in the newsroom said you sound perfectly fine to me. I just do not feel that way. I think my voice sounds so odd, like a frog or a lounge singer or a cross between a frog and a lounge singer.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
His heroics made us swoon this weekend.
I'm the best ever.
I am the greatest.
Now it's time to name the After Hours Monday MVP. I need a hero.
Jackson, play action, throws complete. Hollywood Brown has it at the 30. Leg race in the end zone. They won't catch him. Touchdown, Ravens. Hollywood Brown in the end zone.
Ingram sets to the right. Jackson wants to throw. Has all day going deep. Down the middle of the field, looking for Hollywood Brown. He's got him. Dolphins 30, leg race 20, and he's going to score. Hollywood Brown, his second touchdown on his second catch in the NFL.
Oh, my God.
83 yards, and the Ravens are on fire. Jackson on the play fake, throws to Ricard at the goal line, and the fullback is in for the touchdown. Pat Ricard on the reception, and the Ravens in the second half, resembling the Ravens in the first half, as they put it in the end zone again.
Not bad for a running back. But, yeah, offensive line did a great job. I barely had pressure. Receivers did a great job of getting open, catching the ball, scoring a touchdown. That's what it's all about, and that's what we did today.
That might be my favorite post-game reaction of anything we got in week one. The player of the week sponsored by Grainger. Let's take a look at the one who got it done. Your choice for Monday MVP. Thanks for voting on Twitter and Facebook. Quarterback Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens, who led the team to touchdowns on six of its first seven possessions in South Florida for the game. He had five touchdowns, all of them passes. A perfect passer rating, and the Ravens set multiple offensive records, including 643 total yards and dominant time of possession. That ball control, the connection between Lamar and Hollywood Brown, not bad for a running back, eh? The call's there with Jerry Sandusky on the Ravens radio network. The player of the week sponsored by Grainger. Grainger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Grainger.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Love to get all your football responses. Lots of them on Twitter, A-Law Radio, like this one. I don't know what the season holds for the Raiders, but I was happy for them tonight. And also on our Facebook page, a lot of you weighing in about the New Orleans Saints, which I just think, yet again, and I said this last year too, could you have a team with more motivation, more on a mission? The Saints remind me of the Los Angeles Dodgers, though of course the Dodgers got to the World Series and twice have lost. But for the New Orleans Saints, chomping at the bit all of this offseason. Sure, there was a rule change. A lot of damn good it does them now, right? That would be my attitude. A lot of good it does us now, thanks. But the idea that they had to wait through a long and painful offseason yet again. You'll hear from Drew Brees after the top of the hour in our latest QB news. But Jeff says on Facebook, what a comeback for the Saints. It really was obvious in the second half what a groove they snapped into. And they ended up gaining 510 total yards against the Texans. Now, I didn't think the Texans played poorly on defense, but to hear from J.J. Watt after the game, he was definitely taking responsibility.
Yeah, the offense did an incredible job. I mean, the offense deserves a ton of credit for the way they played, especially in the second half. And then obviously that last drive giving us the lead. And then as a defense, that's on us. I mean, there's a lot of things that were on us. I mean, holding 3 points in the first half and then give up 27 in the second. I mean, it's terrible.
And so he makes a good point. The Saints came out of the halftime locker room in some kind of a fifth gear. I mean, they had given up the interception, the Whitney Merciless interception that was in deep in the red zone, and then the 94-yard drive engineered by Deshaun Watson. That happened in the first half. But Brees in the offense, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Ted Ginn, we could go on. Traquan Smith with the touchdown catch from Drew Brees that he threw across his body off the wrong foot. Maybe they just didn't want to be embarrassed again like they were with Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home a year ago. But with 37 seconds left, they had coughed up the lead. So the Saints defense also gave up some massive plays. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. Dave is listening in New York. Dave, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, first-time caller.
Cool.
I just wanted to talk about Antonio Brown and the example he's setting for, you know, the youth today. To me, it's pretty sad. I just want to get your opinion on that, and especially the way he's going to New England. You know, it's pretty funny. I don't agree with some people, but they're saying that New England is actually behind the scenes of this whole thing, which I just think is crazy, but who knows anymore. You know, the example that he's setting and then the Patriots signing him up hours later, you know, it's just a tarnish on the game. It really is. And I just want to get your thoughts on that.
I mean, as for the example he's setting for young people, obviously there are plenty of poor examples from professional athletes for young people, which is why, you know, I never talk about athletes as heroes. I mean, there are a lot of great role models out there, and I hope that many of them aspire to be that. I think many of them do. Too often, professional athletes get branded by the ridiculous actions of a few, which is not fair. The majority of them are hardworking. They take care of their business. They take care of their families. They go to work. They're chasing their dreams the way that some of us are. Antonio Brown is not one of those guys. I mean, he's hardworking, but obviously all the extracurricular activity and the selfishness. So I agree with you that it's a poor example, but you know what? Some of them don't care. I mean, some of them, that's not what they want to be, is a role model. And in fact, the example that they want to set is one where you take care of me and you pay attention to me and you do what's best for me and don't worry about your teammates. And so, yeah, I mean, when it comes to kids, when it comes to young people, I think they're better off getting their role models elsewhere, you know, parents, grandparents, teachers, that kind of stuff. But I mean, that's individual from kid to kid. Certainly these athletes are put on a pedestal and are extremely high profile, and we get heavy doses of them and all of their activities. As for the New England Patriots, the NFL doesn't plan to investigate, at least at this point. I wouldn't be shocked, Dave, only because I'm never shocked about any of this kind of stuff anymore. I think there's a lot of clandestine activity that's done behind the scenes when it's not supposed to be. I mean, think about all the tampering that takes place in the NBA, and there's really nothing that Adam Silver can do about it, even though he would like to. I think in the case of the Patriots, I don't know that they initiated the whole thing, but I think that they were more than willing to take advantage of Antonio Brown forcing his way out of Oakland. And you talk about not believing everything you hear. I mean, the Patriots didn't want him, and the Steelers didn't want to trade for him, and they made the price really high. So Brown knew that the Patriots wanted him. In fact, he told the Steelers he wanted to go to New England, and they said hell no, and again, made the price too high so that the Patriots wouldn't pay it. So maybe this was something that he orchestrated. Maybe it was something that he was secretly hoping he could do. Though I think, for a while at least, it looked like he was going to play for Oakland and give it all he had. I just, once he got angry at Mike Mayock and once he got ticked about the fines and his guaranteed money, he threw a temper tantrum like he does most of the time and made himself persona non grata to Oakland so he couldn't stay there. So I think that the Patriots were more than willing to pounce. And if they didn't wait until he actually got released by the Raiders, I wouldn't be surprised. But you know what? The Seattle Seahawks wanted him too. And it was the Patriots who, you know, who Brown wanted to sign with. So, Dave. All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much for weighing in for the first time. 855-212-4227. That's our toll free line. 855-212-4CBS. Ken says this on Twitter. How did you and the boys, men, I'm sure he means men, how did you and the men do on Survival Island? I love that he calls it Survival Island. Ken from Ontario, Canada. So would one of you men like to tell Ken, that rhymes, how we all did on Survivor Island?
Well, Ken, we all picked Seattle and we all barely made it through. But a win is a win is a win is a win. So we all moved on.
You are what your record says you are. So were you guys sweating it out or were you not paying any attention? Were you like completely forgot about Survival Island?
No, I was paying attention. I had a couple of fantasy players in that game. Plus, I picked it in another Survivor pool that I'm in. So
you did the same team in both?
Yeah, I'm in three, so I have two out of the three. Yeah.
What did you pick in the other one?
The Eagles, which was also interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Chris, were you nervous?
Yeah, because you know that being bounced out in the first week 2 years in a row would have been devastating.
Embarrassing. Yes, yeah, we would have been crushed. Why do we all pick the same team? And it wasn't even like we coordinated. We had no idea that unless the two of you spoke. I know you sometimes coordinate outfits.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's what we're doing back here.
Hoodies and hats, Yankees gear.
No, we didn't talk about it at all.
Oh, okay. Well, so I haven't even looked at the week two schedule, so I haven't made my pick yet. Is there any way that we could find out how many peeps were eliminated from Survivor Islands?
Sure.
That'd be fun. I mean, sort of. I know my mom is part of that. And I feel terrible. It is embarrassing to be out week number one. But my mom knows nothing about football. And I wanted her to have fun. And I thought it would be fun and cute if she continued to pick winners. But thanks a lot, Cleveland. Thanks for nothing. All right, coming up next, your QB news with Tom Brady, Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, Drew Brees. It's After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.